I'm okay, okay.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mrs. Feminist Podcast. I am so excited that we are into season two as of this Wednesday. So this is coming out Tuesday. So tomorrow will be our 1 year anniversary of this podcast. It's been a huge learning experience figuring out technical issues and how to get across this message. A lot of learning. So thank you so much for sticking with it and letting us have those growing pains. And I'm really excited for this next year and all of the fun stuff we've got planned and on the docket. So, for those of you who did tune in last season, we talked a lot about the feminist movement, the terms, where it started, why it's still so important, a lot of those groundwork issues and things that you need to know. So this second season, what I'm really excited about is we kind of get to dive into the nitty-gritty. So we're doing a bit of a different format. So 1 week we're going to be talking about a feminist issue or something that's come up. So for example, our last podcast was on our word for 2019, which is diligence. And then the weeks in between that, we're going to be talking about badass women throughout history. So we'll focus on one woman and go into depth about her. So how did I come up with this idea? Which is so brilliant. Back when I was in university, a lot of my assignments weren't necessarily writing papers, although we did do a lot of that, or tests. It was a lot of teaching lectures. So we'd be assigned a topic or a writer or a piece, and we'd have to teach for the full class period about that thing. So the format was kind of about the person behind it, the thing itself, and then questions and theories and all of that. So my favorite part of these assignments was doing the biography work. I found it so fascinating. I remember my first lecture I had to teach was about Sylvia Plath, who I hated in high school. I thought she was so dramatic and just stupid. And then I fell in love with her. And so my lectures always ended up being like 90% biography, 10% of the actual topic, which is probably why I didn't graduate like summa cum laude, because that wasn't necessarily the point of those lectures, but I had a lot of fun with it. So we did one episode like this in season one where we talked about Abigail Adams, and you guys really seemed to like it. So I want to make sure we're doing that more because I think we could all benefit from learning a little bit about her story. So what is her story? Well, most of us are well acquainted with history, stories of all the brave men who have made this world what it is today. However, what about the ladies? So many of their stories were lost as society devalued the voices and experiences of women. So I want to help bring more of those stories to light. So today we are talking about the notorious RBG. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is someone I kind of knew vaguely about her. Her name comes up in feminist literature a lot as kind of one of the founding mothers of the feminist movement, but I didn't understand why. I just knew her as like essentially a meme that I've seen on the internet a lot. It wasn't until Brett Kavanaugh was up for Supreme Court that I actually did figure out who she was. So I guess that's one thing we can think Brett Kavanaugh for in this podcast episode. Just kidding. Not gonna go there. Actually, I will because it is relevant. So, the Encyclopedia of World Biographies writes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the second woman ever to sit on the United States Supreme Court and is known as the legal architect of the modern woman's movement. She, more than any other person, pointed out that many laws encouraged gender discrimination. That is, they led to better treatment of men than women instead of guaranteeing equal rights and opportunities to all, as was intended by the United States Constitution. So this specifically is really well played out on the big screen in the new movie about her life called On the Basis of Sex. John and I went and saw it the other week, and I literally just cried through the whole thing. It's just so good. It's a great example of an egalitarian marriage. Her husband is the sweetest little nugget, an Armie Hammer, I think that's the actor who plays him. so good looking, you guys. It does a really good job of showing what the reality was for women, even women who, by all accounts, if you were looking at it from a meritocracy point of view, had super earned every opportunity that they were being shut down from. It also does a really good job of showing Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how kind of quirky and shy she was, but also this powerful advocate and her family life and all of it. So it was a really beautiful, beautiful movie and so well made. So I highly recommend it. It is 100% worth your $13 at the movie theater. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, in true Zoolander fashion, still hot right now. It's a really fantastic thing because she deserves so much love and she should be considered an incredible badass woman from history. So Dahlia Lithwick writes for The Atlantic, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not just having a moment in American feminist culture. She has rapidly become, in a time that craves her own, the American ideal of power and authority for millions of women and girls. Beyond the movies, RBG and On the Basis of Sex, and the biographies, not to mention the memes and t-shirts and mugs that proliferate like lace-colored mushrooms, Ginsburg at 85 is also the closest thing America has to the consummate anti-Donald Trump. Today, more than ever, women starved for models of female influence, authenticity, dignity, and voice hold up in octogenarian justice as the embodiment of hope for an empowered future. So let's learn about her. So Ruth Joan Bader was born on March 15, 1933 to Nathan and Cecilia Bader in Brooklyn, New York. Her mother, Cecilia, was her greatest role model. Cecilia was really passionate and encouraged Ruth to use her voice for good. She was actually held back by social conventions of her time, Cecilia, that is. She was forced to go work in a factory so that her family could afford to send her brother to college, even though by all accounts she was incredibly intelligent and would have made an equally, if not better, choice for who to place all the family money towards for higher education. So as she was going through all this, she really hoped for a better future for her daughter. In a New York Times article, Ruth said, following her being sworn into the Supreme Court, "I pray that I may be all she would have been had she lived in an age when women could aspire and achieve and daughters are cherished as much as sons." Cecilia died just days before Ruth graduated from high school. So Ruth went to Cornell on a full scholarship, super impressive, having been top of her class and an active participant in extracurriculars like the school newsletter. So Britannica writes, during her first semester, Ruth met her future husband, Marty Ginsburg, who was also a student at Cornell. Martin, who eventually became a nationally prominent tax attorney, exerted an important influence on Ruth through his strong and sustained interest in her intellectual pursuits. So, much like my beloved John, Marty was a fantastic feminist and believed his wife brought the same amount of value as him to this world. So, because of the way society was structured back then, he could have been a total patriarchal douchebag, but he was, by all accounts, a total cutie and an ally. I've seen pictures of them together. Super freaking adorable. And like I said, Armie Hammer in the movie is just so, so good looking. Okay. You guys are going to be like, not the point of this podcast. But I feel like it's very important for the world to know how good looking he is. Okay, sorry, John. All right, let's move on. So they ended up both studying at law at Harvard, during which Marty was actually diagnosed with testicular cancer. So Ruth began attending his classes along with her own, along with caring for him and their infant daughter, Jane, to help keep their family going through this troubled time. And this is really well documented in the movie On the Basis of Sex, and it's really beautiful. Another thing I forgot to mention is there's this scene where he finds out he has testicular cancer and kind of it's hit him, what that means for him and his family, and he just starts weeping in her arms. And after the movie, I said to John, when's the last time you saw a movie where a man openly wept like that? I thought it was so beautiful and such just an incredible example of the anti-toxic masculinity, which is that men have the same emotions women do and they should be allowed to express them just as women do. So throughout her studies at Harvard, Ruth was consistently told she was stealing a seat in the classroom from qualified men, with many of the professors straight up ignoring the female students altogether. So Ruth was one of 8 women in her 500-plus student class, all of which were whip-smart but overlooked and ignored due to their gender. At the time, there wasn't even female bathrooms in the school, so they had to go across the street. And I think that's really interesting because now, for example, the university I went to, Ambrose, we have, it's pretty split, male and female students, but definitely more female students than men. And I think that's a really cool thing because it's not cool in the way that it's like, ooh, women taking over the world, because I think we both need to take over the world. But it's really cool because that's an opportunity that women did not have back then. They were always the severe, severe minority, not on equal terms at all. So Marty did recover from testicular cancer and he graduated, and then after discussing it with Ruth, he accepted a job in New York. So she was able to transfer to Columbia so she could move with him, and she completed her school. She ended up being tied for top of her class, which, go Ruth. I mean, I struggled enough with school being just like a normal person with like a bunny and a husband, let alone having to have attended all your husband's classes because he was sick, and having a daughter you're raising and working is just insane. So despite her incredible credentials, nobody would hire her. She recalls being denied jobs based on reasoning such as, oh, you'll be too distracted by your kids, and we don't want to preoccupy you from your husband, and we need really level-headed lawmakers here, not just emotional lawyers and women. So eventually she did find a job teaching. And just for the record, I would like to make note that that is not something that has completely gone away. I was up for a promotion at my job when I worked at Starbucks. It was something I'd worked really hard for since day one. I'd been working there for 3 years, wanted to move from a barista to a shift supervisor. And we were between managers, so I approached our district manager and just said, like, hey, I was on track for this. I'd really like to make it happen. What do I need to do? And he was like, oh, didn't you just get married? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's been awesome. So anyways, about the promotion. And he was like, well, I think you might be too distracted by your husband right now and starting a family. I don't know that that would be the best career move for you. And I remember telling my dad that, and he was like, that is insane. You need to tell someone. But I was like, we were in the back room. There's no cameras, no voice recording. There would be absolutely no way for me to prove that that happened. Like, it's literally my word against his. So that stuff does still happen today, a lot more than we like to think it does, and unfortunately, it still does happen behind closed doors where it can't be brought out because technically it's illegal, but it still goes on very frequently, and I think that's something that we forget. Just because something is technically illegal doesn't mean that it's not still happening. So Britannica writes, hired by the Rutgers School of Law as an assistant professor in 1963, Ruth was asked by the dean of the school to accept a low salary because of her husband's well-paying job. And after she became pregnant with the couple's second child, a son, James, born in 1965, Ginsburg wore oversized clothes for the fear that her contract would not be renewed. She ended up earning tenure at Rutgers in 1969. Ruth was soon able to work as a lawyer alongside her teaching work when she began to work with the ACLU, an organization that seeks to protect the rights and civil liberties of marginalized Americans. And they're still up and running today. A lot of people will donate to them in the name of Donald Trump, which I think is kind of funny, but that's a side note. So Encyclopedia of World Biographies writes, a former ACLU colleague was quoted as telling the Legal Times, We were young and very green. She had it all so carefully thought through. She knew exactly what she needed to do. In a 1973 case before the Supreme Court, Ginsburg successfully argued against a federal law that gave more housing and medical benefits to male members of the armed services than to females. However, she did not argue only cases in which women were the victims of discrimination. She believed that the law must be equal to all groups of people at all times. For instance, she convinced the court that a portion of the Social Security Act, a law that provides protection for people against loss of income due to old age, disability, or death, favored women over men because it gave certain benefits to widows but not to widowers. Her work to remove certain legislation's gender bias marked her as a key political figure for the women's movement. So in 1980, Democratic U.S. President Jimmy Carter appointed Ginsburg to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in Washington, D.C., and on June 14, 1993, Democratic U.S. President Bill Clinton announced his nomination of Ginsburg to the Supreme Court. So that was my birth year. So like 15 days later, I was born. So that's kind of cool. So Ginsburg was endorsed by a vote of 96-3. 96-3, you guys. So a little bit different than our latest vote. So Ruth was really popular because she pleased everyone, which nowadays is freaking hard to do. So conservatives loved her because of her unwavering dedication to the Constitution and the word of the law. And liberals loved her because she actively worked to bring the law into this new, freer era. So, for example, during the infamous Roe v. Wade case where abortion was legalized, Ruth welcomed this decision because she believed women needed to have more control over their bodies, but she also believed the word of the law should have been more limited, which would have left more room for state legislators to address specific details. Such an approach, she claimed, might serve to reduce rather than to fuel the controversy. Now, you may have seen posters, pins, t-shirts, mugs, and more plastered with the words, "I dissent." So throughout her career, Ginsburg concluded her dissents with the phrase, "I dissent," rather than the conventional and more common, "I respectfully dissent," which she considered an unnecessary and slightly disingenuous nicety. I love that. I'm going to start using that all the time. People are going to be like, "Hey, Allie, can you go do this?" And I'll be like, "I dissent." And I'll be like, "What? I'm just asking you to..." And I'll be like, no, I dissent. So today, Ruth is 85 years old. Near the end of the Obama administration, she was widely encouraged to step down so that Obama could get in a Supreme Court nomination for the liberals. People basically said, like, "Dude, you are super old. We need to replace you with a new liberal in case the conservatives get in and you die." And she said, "Screw you, I am immortal," and she kept her seat. In an interview in 2016, Ginsburg expressed dismay at the possibility that Republican candidate Donald Trump would be elected president, a statement that was widely criticized as not keeping with the court's tradition of staying out of politics. She quickly apologized, and to this day, she says she deeply regrets saying that, nodding back to the claim that Supreme Court justices should stay out of politics so that the people can trust them to be as unbiased and as unpolitically motivated as possible. I really admire her for being so bipartisan. I definitely know that if I were in her place, I would not be. I am way too wildly opinionated for that, and I think most of us who are interested in politics are. So in January 2018, after President Donald Trump released a list of Supreme Court candidates in preparation for the looming retirement of elderly justices, the 84-year-old Ginsburg signaled she wasn't going anywhere by hiring a full slate of clerks through 2020. I like her style. Again, she was like, "Not so fast. I'm going to outlive and outwork all of you." So, I hate discussing Brett Kavanaugh, but it's relevant here in relation to Ruth because these confirmation hearings used to not be the literal crap show that they are today. So, when he was being questioned, she did an interview with the Washington Times, and I'll read a piece of it now. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Wednesday criticized the Senate hearings for Judge Brett M. Kavanaugh and lamented that the process for confirmation had devolved into a highly partisan show since she was confirmed in 1993. Justice Ginsburg also noted that the late Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia was confirmed 98-0. Despite his conservative leanings. Think of Justice Scalia, who's certainly a known character in, what was it, 1986, she said. The vote was unanimous. Every Democrat and every Republican voted for him. That is the way it should be, instead of what it's become, which is this highly partisan show. The Republicans move in lockstep, and so do the Democrats. I wish I could wave a magic wand and have it go back to the way it was. So, the final vote for Kavanaugh was 50-48, which was highly influenced by the Democrats' claims that he sexually assaulted a woman as a teenager, which prompted widespread uproar. An FBI investigation was unable to corroborate his accuser's allegations, although the thoroughness of that investigation left something to be desired. But it was all rushed because people were being stupid, and it gave neither party a chance to be fully cleared one way or the other. Now back to Ruth. On June 27, 2010, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband, Martin, died of cancer. She described Martin as her biggest booster and the only young man I dated who cared that I had a brain. Married for 56 years, the relationship between Ruth and Martin was said to differ from the norm. Martin was gregarious, he loved to entertain and tell jokes, while Ginsburg was a serious, soft-spoken girl and very shy. Martin provided a reason for their successful union. I love this. He said, "My wife doesn't give me any advice about cooking, and I don't give her any advice about the law." A day after her husband's death, she was at work on the court for the last day of the 2010 term. So a little bit more about their family. Their daughter, Jane, is a professor at Columbia Law School, and their son, James, is the founder and president of Cedile Records, a classical music recording company based in Chicago, Illinois. Ginsburg is also a grandmother of four. So on November 8th, 2018, so just late this past year, she fell in her Supreme Court office and she fractured three ribs, which really sucked, but it was also kind of a blessing in disguise because when they went to go do a follow-up x-ray to make sure there were no rib fragments left, they noticed that she had cancer. So she underwent surgery to remove that. It was very successful and she's been recovering. Fox News reported the other day that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg will miss next week's court sessions and work from home, but her recovery from early-stage lung cancer surgery remains on track and no further treatment is needed. So, who is the notorious RBG? She is a badass judge who fought against gender discrimination and was an ally to women and men and all marginalized communities that the law overlooked. She was passionate about justice and had the rare ability to put aside her own personal opinions and bias to ensure the full letter of the law was being carried out. She was a loving mother and wife who rejected the status quo but accepted her family with her full heart. She was not perfect, at times prideful and aloof, but she was always striving to be better and to make sure she was treating people with respect. And I don't know why I put that all in past tense, because she's still alive and she still is doing all those things very well. I really admire how she was able to be really strong-willed, but also level-headed. I am definitely strong-willed, but I sometimes lose control of the level-headedness side. And I think the reason why she's been so wildly admired and successful is that she has been able to do both so well. So, three cheers for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's it for today, you guys. I hope you enjoyed learning a little bit about the notorious RBG, and we'll be back next week. Have a great rest of your week.